At the legislature today, the Speaker of the House defends his decision to put the Senate's water protection bill through its paces in three House committees, and he has the backing of his members. In the Senate, representatives of the state's two teachers' unions react to the proposed Move to Improve Act. They say teachers are already getting their students some extra exercise. These stories coming up on the legislature today. Mara. Senate Bill 373 proposes various regulations on storing fluids after the January 9th chemical spill that contaminated the water of 300,000 residents for days. After passing through the Senate in rapid fashion, the House has referenced the bill to three committees. In the past, that's been a sign that the bill will be slowed down. But on the floor today, delegates decried that notion. Aaron Payne reports.
Last night on the legislature today, the bill's lead sponsor, Senator John Unger, said he was okay with the House taking his bill through three committees, but he had a message for his colleagues on the other side of the Capitol.
The urgency is to get this bill passed so that registration inspections can happen immediately, so that the situation that happened in Kanawha County will never happen again anywhere throughout West Virginia. But right now we don't have those assurances until that bill is passed. So I would hope that the House, and they've proven it before where they've suspended rules, were able to move it, study it the way as much as they need to, but also move it along because the people demand action.
It took 12 days from its introduction for the Senate to pass Bill 373, 2 days since its introduction to the House, and it has yet to be seen by its first committee. The bill will have three committee stops, starting with Health and Human Resources, followed by Judiciary, and then finally Finance. Now, typically, a three-committee stop is usually the kiss of death for a bill, and Senate leaders are concerned that the House isn't taking the bill seriously. However, delegates took the time today to say that simply isn't the case.
It should not be suggested to the public that this body, in any way, is intending not to take action on this issue. While I cannot speak for anyone but myself, I do believe, however, that there are members on both sides of this aisle that would break down the doors of our speaker if we as members felt that this, in fact, was the case.
It is not our job in the House of the people to rubber stamp anything that comes here, whether it's from the Senate or from the executive. We have 25 members in this House whose counties were affected by the spill. The majority of the people in this House will have the opportunity, through the committee process, to examine this bill and make it the best bill that it can be.
Delegate Brady Paxton reminded his colleagues that the recent water contamination is still an ongoing issue and that relief would only come from a concentrated group effort.
Let's all try to do, well, of course you're going to do your level best, but give an extra effort to try to get this thing behind us. It's a terrible situation, and I think if we all pull together, we can fix it.
House Speaker Tim Miley says that each committee stop is appropriate and represents a unique issue brought up in the wake of the chemical leak. According to him, the concerns that the bill will slow down in the House are ludicrous.
It's nonsense for people to get upset about a triple reference. We're not even halfway through the legislative session. There's plenty of time to get a good piece of legislation through the process. So to the extent anyone is suggesting that the bill is not going to make it through or was triple referenced because there was a desire to see the bill killed is not being honest with you and is not being honest with the public, general public of West Virginia.
The House Health and Human Resource Committee will host a public hearing on Senate Bill 373 in the House chamber at 5:30 on Monday. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
And West Virginia Public Broadcasting will bring you that public hearing live on television and radio Monday. We'll have the details for you at the end of our program. Yesterday, Senate Majority Leader John Unger was here to tell us about his Move to Improve Act. Today, the senator and his Select Committee on Children in Poverty heard from stakeholders on the implementation of the bill should it pass. Also in the Senate today, the introduction of a major bill backed by the Senate president.
Both physically, nutritionally, mentally.
Senator Unger's Move to Improve Act passed through the Senate Health Committee yesterday and is headed to education for its consideration next week. The bill requires 30 additional minutes of physical activity to be incorporated into the school day. But West Virginia Education Association President Dale Lee says this isn't a new concept for teachers.
Now, my initial thought with this bill, when Senator Unger, you approached me, was I don't want to see another mandate put onto our teachers. So I made several phone calls to elementary and middle school teachers across the state. What I found is what I've always believed, that I believe in teachers. I believe teachers do the things necessary to help their kids achieve. And when I talked to teachers, the first thing I said to them was, what do you think about 30 minutes of additional activity in the classroom? And teachers from across the state told me, we're already doing that.
Lee told the committee when he was a high school geometry teacher, he incorporated movements into his classroom, all without being mandated. American Federation of Teachers West Virginia chapter president Christine Campbell agreed more movement in the classroom means more focus from students. But she wanted to make sure teachers were given the opportunity to be creative when incorporating the new requirement.
I think having opportunities to spread that out over the course of the day is going to give teachers the flexibility to figure that out. I think they take on things like this because they understand it, they know it works, and they're willing to do it. But they need the support to say, yes, we're going to let you figure this out and give you the time and resources to create lessons that really make sense and increase that physical activity.
Campbell told committee members she believes Unger's bill does give teachers that flexibility. While the bill fights the childhood obesity epidemic across the state, Senator Donald Cookman introduced a bill also of statewide importance. Senate Bill 457 requires rehabilitation programs be offered at regional jails for temporary Division of Corrections inmates. The bill addresses the state's prison overcrowding problem. During interim meetings, Division of Corrections Commissioner Jim Rubenstein told lawmakers the problem is starting to come under control, but some inmates still sit in regional jails for up to a year before they can receive the rehabilitative classes they need to make parole.
This bill would require the regional jails to provide those same classes that DOC provides so that when the person reaches that one-year threshold on a one to five, 1 to 10, 1 to 15-year sentence, indeterminate sentence, that they would be, in fact, parole-ready. And they could go before the parole board and actually be paroled out of the regional jail as opposed to having to go to the penitentiary.
The regional jails have said they could provide Division of Corrections classes in their facilities if they are given some additional funds topping $750,000.
The benefit is, on the other side, it'll probably save $7 to $8 million for that $750,000 investment.
Also introduced today, a bill much talked about before the start of the session, Senate President Jeff Kessler's Future Fund. Kessler says the proposal this year, however, is slightly different from years past.
Number one, this bill just sets up the statutory framework to establish the fund. It provides that any revenues from the oil and gas severance tax over and above a baseline of $175 million would be placed into the fund. It will then be put in a fund to be held, can't touch the principal, for up to 6 years. In the past, that was 20. That was based on our trip to North Dakota. I believe that's what they had done 6 or 7 years before they could touch it, and it seemed to work quite well because the public and or sometimes politicians don't have the patience to wait 20 years for much of anything.
In a tight budget year, Kessler says he understands his fellow lawmakers' cautions to divert any more funds from general revenue, but he expects the gas industry to continue growing. That will provide new revenues. Kessler wants to save those new funds for the state's future.
Rainy day is for basically natural disasters and budget shortfalls that occur from time to time. I look for this future fund more as a progress fund, things that we can do to save the money so we can accomplish the big things we need to do in West Virginia, like fix our roads, raise our teachers' salaries so we keep our best and brightest teachers here in the state, and, you know, for giving tax relief, looking at getting rid of the business and inventory tax, which is such a drag on our business community. None of those, we'd love to do them all. We don't have the money to do any of them.
It will take a constitutional amendment approved by the state's voters to determine how the money can be spent. Should the bill pass this session, Kessler says it could be on the ballot for voters' approval as early as November.
Consideration Senate Bill 357.
In a moment, we'll be joined by two members of the State House Press Corps to discuss the events of the week. First, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today. Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 457 to require that inmates in a regional jail but committed to the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections have available the same classes and programs that are offered in Division of Corrections facilities. Senate Bill 458 to impose certain additional fees in circuit courts to fund civil legal services for low-income persons. And Senate Bill 461, creating the Future Fund. Among the bills up for passage on Monday, Senate Bill 267, to ensure that state courts have jurisdiction to prosecute fraudulent or unauthorized uses of government purchasing cards. Senate Bill 381, to require CPR to be taught in the public school system as a condition of graduation. And Senate Bill 405, to require the permission of the presiding judge in order for jury qualification forms to be released after the conclusion of a trial. Among the bills on second reading, the amendment stage, Senate Bill 257, to codify existing common law in West Virginia as it relates to the duty of care possessors of property owe trespassers. And Senate Bill 408, relating to conditions for parole. Every Friday, we take some time to catch up with the members of the State House Press Corps for their perspective of the news at the Capitol. Joining us this week, Eric Ayer, the State House reporter for the Charleston Gazette, and George Homan, legislative correspondent for the West Virginia Press Association. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here this evening. George, I'd like to start with you. I think we heard in my piece earlier this evening about this Move to Improve Act. This is requiring 30 minutes of additional physical activity be integrated into the school day. But Dale Lee is saying, well, I'm talking to teachers and they're already doing it. I think that begs the question of reporting requirements. Do we even know what's going on in our schools when we put requirements in like this?
Well, that's an interesting question, because the Our Kids, Our Future Coalition, in some of their workshops and earlier sessions, have looked at this, and people kept asking, well, what's the policy? And so they came up with a grid that showed all the different policies. And then the question, of course, well, okay, what's actually happening? And they found no one knows.
That's an interesting point. Now, this Our Children, Our Future campaign, they came out with an 11-point legislative 11 points they're looking for the legislature to take on this session, and one of those was raising the minimum wage. We've seen bills introduced into both houses at this point, both chambers at this point, to increase the minimum wage. But can you tell us, what do those bills look like exactly?
Yes. Well, the one that's moved most recently was on Wednesday in the House. The House Industry and Labor Committee passed a bill unanimously that would increase the state's minimum wage to $8.25 an hour over time. I'm not sure about unanimously, but it's now gone to the House Finance Committee. And a couple of interesting background points. Ted Bettner of the West Virginia Center for Budget and Policy, he has said that the minimum wage in 1968, if translated in today's dollars, would be $10.72 an hour. Also, the last time the state raised the minimum wage, I was surprised to see how few people were actually impacted by it. There are all kinds of loopholes and federal rules that take precedent. And I noticed the Charleston Daily Mail in a recent editorial did updated numbers. They cited the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the federal agency, as saying 26,000 people in West Virginia are paid the minimum wage or less. That was 2012. There are about 746,000 people working in West Virginia, so that's less than 5% of the workers.
And that's not, obviously, I think when people hear we're raising the minimum wage, they think that's going to impact a lot of families, but 5% isn't that much. We were talking yesterday about this idea of raising the minimum wage at the state level and raising it at the federal level. What's the difference? Why does the federal level affect more people?
Yes, well, I think it's because most of these companies nowadays operate across state lines, and I believe that means that you're going to have to comply with federal law, and the federal minimum wage takes precedent.
And any word from the federal level? Are we looking at a minimum wage raise?
Well, President Obama's been talking about it quite a lot. I think he mentioned it in his State of the Union speech Tuesday night. The states, however, are kind of taking this issue on, and a lot of states have started the discussion that's going on here now. And some states, like Ohio, have already acted. Ohio, I believe, raised their minimum wage on January the 1st.
So minimum wage, again, this Our Children, Our Future campaign. Minimum wage, they were also touting Senate President Jeff Kessler's future fund. Give us a few more examples. What were some of the other points that they were looking to further in the legislature?
Yes, yes. Well, they are wanting to protect funding for family support programs. But the day the governor released his budget, they put out a memo to the folks in the coalition saying that the governor's budget would cut those programs by about 8.5%. They're real keen on family education programs in the home, and they would like to expand that statewide. But again, when the budget came out from the governor's office, they said, oh, my goodness, the budget would cut this by 25% as opposed to expanding it. You talked about the 30 minutes of exercise. And the other issue that's on their agenda is substance abuse.
Substance abuse, which leads us to some of the reporting, Eric, that you've done in recent weeks. One of the major bills before the chemical spill actually happened was pseudoephedrine. Everyone was looking at this pseudoephedrine bill. Now, they've both been introduced in the House and the Senate, but we haven't heard anything of them yet. So tell us where those bills stand, and what do they look like? What are they trying to do?
Well, just about an hour ago, Ashton, we got word that a House Health Committee will take up the pseudoephedrine bill next week. What it does is, it's pretty simple. Right now, when you go into a pharmacy, you have to show your photo ID, and you can get a box of pseudoephedrine, which is, for your viewers, Sudafed and Claritin D, Aleve D, those kind of drugs. It's for colds and allergies. And what it would do now, it would require a prescription for pseudoephedrine. You would have to actually go to a doctor, get a prescription, and then you would go to the pharmacy with your prescription and buy it.
So what's the background on this? Why do we need this bill? What are lawmakers saying this is going to help with?
Well, the reason for the bill is they say it will help reduce meth labs. In the first half of this year, we had 300 meth lab seizures across the state, statewide. By the end of the year, we had 533. Last year, in 2012, we had 288. So it was an 85% increase in meth labs. And the connection to meth labs is the pseudoephedrine is the key ingredient to manufacture meth. Without it, you can't make meth.
So I understand that these bills, at least as far as the Senate side, the Senate bill says that they will all be for prescriptions unless they're these tamper-proof type drugs. Is the House bill the same, and what exactly does that mean?
You're exactly right, and that's the big difference that I forgot to mention. This year, as you know, this bill has come up in previous years, and it did not pass. But this year, there's a new wrinkle to it, and that is that there are two products, Zefrex D, and the other one is Nexafed, and these are products that cannot be easily converted to meth. They're like a liquid gel kind of capsule, and they cannot be made into meth. So the legislation will say that you have to get a prescription for all products except these two products. You won't have to get a prescription for the tamper-resistant or the ones that the meth cooks can't convert to meth.
So I think that lawmakers, as far as I've been talking to, have been saying, you know, we want this bill because it's going to cut down on meth labs. It's going to cut down on the possible exposure to these harmful chemicals. And the lobbyists are saying the exact opposite. This isn't going to do anything for your meth lab count. What do the lobbyists want to see happen? Are you hearing anything from them?
Sure. The bill that the lobbyists support is a bill that would set up a meth offender registry. And that is going to be people who are convicted of meth crimes would no longer be able to buy pseudoephedrine products when they get out of jail or when they're, whatever time they've served. They're no longer going to be able to buy those products. So if you were at a pharmacy and somebody comes in, you can type in their name when they show their ID and easily, see if they have a conviction before for a meth-related crime. But what the supporters of the pseudoephedrine bill say that they'll hire, these meth cooks will still hire what they call smurfers, who are people that don't have convictions, that go from pharmacy to pharmacy and buy the pseudoephedrine.
So maybe not cutting back on smurfers. We're not really sure how the legislation is going to deal with those. As far as I've heard, there's no legislation introduced to deal with these smurfers and to penalize them if they find someone and convict someone of doing something like that.
Right.
Have you heard of anything?
No, they really haven't talked too much about the smurfers. It's a problem. That's the problem. That's why they want to go to the prescription only. They say that if they don't go to that, there'll be all sorts of ways that criminals will circumvent the rules.
And I think it also begs the question, you know, there are areas of this state, there are regions that have severe prescription drug abuse, severe prescription drug issues. So I think it begs the question, you know, do we make this a prescription? Does it actually make that better if we're abusing it other places? But, gentlemen, thank you so much for being with me tonight. Such an interesting conversation, and we look forward to having you back as the session progresses.
Thank you.
Thanks. And here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today. Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 4380, to make the Department of Corrections and the Department of Health and their respective workplaces subject to the Occupational Safety and Health Act. House Bill 4381, to establish a 4-year pilot program to have social workers in public schools from pre-kindergarten through the elementary school. The bill requires a minimum of 1 social worker per county. House Bill 4382, to establish a legislative oversight commission on energy workers' safety. House Bill 4385, to require the transfer to a correctional facility any juvenile tried as an adult in the custody of the Division of Juvenile Services whose sentence runs beyond his or her 18th birthday. On second reading in the House on Monday, House Bill 4147, relating to emergency preparedness. A state of preparedness means the situation existing before a disaster or large-scale threat in which a state of preparedness has been declared by the governor or by the legislature. House Bill 4186, relating to concealed weapons licenses. A license may not be issued unless the county sheriff has verified through the National Instant Criminal Background Check System that the information available does not indicate that receipt or possession of a firearm by the applicant would be in violation of state or federal law. House Bill 4287, to update the administration of medication and performance of health maintenance tasks by unlicensed personnel. And House Bill 4332, to extend the time that certain nonprofit community groups are exempt from the moratorium on creating new nursing home beds. This has been the Legislature Today. On Monday, we will air a special edition of the Legislature Today at 5:30 that evening. House reporter Aaron Payne and I will join Beth Voorhees live from the Capitol as the House of Delegates hold a public hearing about the Elk River chemical spill in the House chamber. West Virginia Public Broadcasting will bring this hearing to you live on West Virginia PBS and West Virginia Public Radio. The House of Delegates Health Committee, the first committee to consider Senate Bill 373, is hosting the hearing jointly with the House Judiciary and Finance Committees. Our regular broadcast of the legislature today will be preempted for this special edition. I'm Ashton Mara. Thank you for joining us. Good night.
Support for Legislature Today provided by the High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org. Support is also provided by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers, online at wvaflcio.org.